Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Truck safety. It's been a horror few months on the roads in New South Wales. Five people have been killed, more than 10 have been injured in heavy vehicle accidents. The number of deaths involving articulated trucks, such as semi-trailers in New South Wales, has increased 86% since September 2016. Mind you, it's not an issue that seems to have been replicated in other states. Across other states, the number of fatalities has actually gone down. Big dip in South Australia, Tasmania and Queensland. That's the good news. But why the difference between New South Wales and the other states? And how do we keep truck drivers safe on the road? Michael Byrne, the Managing Director of Toll Group, a large transport and logistics company, says truck regulation needs to be completely revolutionised in this country. Some in the industry say the federal government should never have abolished the Road Safety Remuneration Tribunal. And right now there's a fierce debate going on about the future regulation of the trucking industry. After all, in July this year, the Heavy Vehicle National Law changes will be introduced, and farmers in particular are not happy. Under the changes, companies breaching safety duties may be fined up to $500,000 and individuals $50,000. Why are trucks generally so old in this country too? There's a whole range of issues here. Joining me on the program tonight, Jeff Crouch is the chair of the Australian Trucking Association. Jeff, good evening.
Good evening, Phil. How are you?
Yes, no, very well. And also Tony Sheldon, the National Secretary of the Transport Workers Union, is with us this evening as well. Tony, good to see you too. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, good to see you too, Phil.
All right. Can we put some of those figures I mentioned into context? Jeff, the trucking is generally safer than it was 30 years ago. It's not as though things are getting worse, are they? Or...
Look, Phil, I don't think things are getting worse. I mean, there are people that have said that the industry's in crisis. I disagree that it's in crisis. If you go back 25 years ago, when we were having substantial issues, that could have been perhaps the correct term. But there was a lot of work done by the implementation of the Australian Trucking Association in response to those concerns 25 years ago. And I think we've got demonstrably safer roads than what we did. Hmm. And I think we're continuing to work to make them even safer still. And the statistics that you were referring to a couple of moments ago, and we'll park New South Wales just for one moment, but the statistics that you refer to, I believe, show that the work that's been done over many, many years by drivers, by industry, by operators, by government and by regulators is working. But I do acknowledge we've still got more work to do.
Hmm. Would you agree, Tony?
Well, I think it's probably the heart of the problem is that there's been an attempt by, you know, unfortunately, parts of the industry to whitewash what is a really critical problem. We've got, of course, a major increase in New South Wales, including interstate trucks that have been involved in incidents. That's spiked as well, coming through New South Wales. We've got in workplaces across the country, injury and death rates are decreasing, and trucking it's increasing, and now equate for 4 out of 10 deaths in workplaces are truck related. And of course, we've got Safe Work Australia, which independently assesses employer attitudes, and we've got horrific statistics regarding expectation on breaching safety arrangements. And for example, in Safe Work Australia, just one statistic, where they say that 20% of transport industry employers break safety rules to meet deadlines. And this compares with 6% from employers in other industries. But that is a crisis to me. I think that amount of deaths is something not to take lightly. Mm. And certainly something statistically.
What do you think the three main issues are? Driver fatigue?
I think I'd rely on the National Transport Commission report in 2015, which studied a whole series of representations from drivers and trucking companies and said one of the major causes of fatigue is because of economic pressure. You drive longer hours if you can't get the work done and be able to put food on the table with a reasonable amount of pay. If you're a trucking company and you're getting paid, as it's now been blowing out, trucking companies are getting paid after 120 days, 90 days, 240 days in one case that just recently got some media coverage. And when you're in a tight industry with low margins, and some cases are sub-marginal, and I say that taking jobs that actually are costing money, to take them. You can't maintain the vehicles. Sweat trucks, sweat drivers, and that means fatigue and death.
We've been arguing about rest and fatigue rules in the trucking business forever, for as long as we've ever discussed this issue. And, you know, New South Wales has the same rest and fatigue rules as most of the other states too. They're not that different. Why are we still, in 2018, arguing about rest and fatigue rules, Jeff Crouch?
Well, it's very simple, Phil. Until we get to the situation where we have zero fatalities on our nation's roads, not just New South Wales, but on the nation's roads, I think we'll continue to have constructive and vigorous discussion on ensuring that we've got the best strategies in place to achieve that. And we just simply can't stop until such time as that happens.
Why is it still an issue, Tony, Sheldon?
Well, I think...
after all these years of argument, why are we still arguing about it?
Yeah, I think we're arguing, but I think, I agree to some degree with what Jeff's saying, but I think part of it also is that we aren't going to the crux of why are people fatigued. Certainly when you're pressured to meet a deadline, you're trying to maintain a contract, then you cut corners. And when you cut corners, that puts pressure on other trucking companies that are competing. And sometimes when you cut those corners, it can have deadly results.
Just for people who are listening, how many hours can long-haul drivers drive per week? Who wants to have a go at this, Jeff?
Off the top of my head, I haven't got it. I'm afraid.
Tony?
Drivers can actually be driving and working for 17 hours. I would say this to politicians.
Hang on. 17 hours, what, a day?
Over a 17-hour period, yes.
But how can that be safe?
Well, so ironically, they call it, if you do a fatigue management program, then you can work longer hours. I would have thought that doing a fatigue management program would tell you you shouldn't be working longer hours.
Okay, is it not a simple question how long a driver can drive without a break?
There's a couple of really important parts in this, and most listeners that are not truck drivers, because of the culture and expectation in the industry, the attempt to keep the wheels turning to meet these low cost contracts. But if you said to a normal person on the street and said, and I say this to politicians often, imagine if you had your staff working in your office 17 hours straight.
But hang on, can we sort this out? Are we saying that we don't know how many hours that a truck driver can work without a break?
Phil, can I just qualify one thing?
Jeff?
The truck drivers can't work for 17 hours straight.
Well, okay? Tony says
they've got to take rest breaks. They can drive for a maximum of 5 hours, and they've got to take a rest break. They've got to take a 12-hour break at certain periods. And
they can drive for five hours. After every 5 hours, they have to take a break.
They've got to take a break. There's a maximum of, and when we're talking about 17 hours, well, that's when we're talking about advanced fatigue management, which is not... It is possible out there, but it's not terribly common in the eastern states. You can have standard fatigue management, which is 12 hours. You can have basic fatigue management, which is what Tony's referring to about doing a training course to be able to do the extra 2 hours in a day. But that includes work time as well. So you can't work for 12 or 14 or 17 hours straight, depending on what fatigue management program you're on. You've got to take designated and prescribed rest breaks after a certain period of time.
So if I get in the truck at 7 in the morning to drive to Melbourne from Sydney, say, can I drive to Melbourne in one go?
No. You'd have to have a rest break after 5 hours
to
start.
How long?
You can drive for 5 hours and you've got to have a rest break.
How long's the rest break?
Minimum of half an hour.
So I get to Melbourne at what? 10 hours later? What happens then? So I've had 1 half-hour break and all of that, have I?
Then you have another break. And only if you've only got standard fatigue management, standard hours, you can only work for a maximum of 12 hours.
But can I have 8 hours off to have a sleep?
You can take as many if you want to. You don't have to just take half an hour. You can take 5 or 6 hours if you wish. You can take as much time as you like, and it depends on what time you need to be in. You need to be in Melbourne if the destination that you're choosing. But you can actually stop for as long as you like. There is no, because it's a, when we say we've got to be careful, it is a minimum. There is no maximum that you can take. You can take as much as you like.
I mean, I'm just. I'm, Can I just admit to some concern here that two people who work in the industry don't appear to be all that clear about how long you can drive a truck without taking a rest break, and that also don't seem to be clear about when you can sleep?
I'm sorry, Phil, I disagree with that. It is quite clear you can drive for 5 hours. That's the maximum.
So if I drive for 5 hours, take half an hour break, and then drive for five hours and take another half an hour break, is that how it works?
And can I say, Phil, this is the big problem here. This is the big problem. And that is the complete and total confusion that a lot of people have with very confusing prescribed driving hours that these men and women on the roads have got to deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
They are confusing. They are difficult. They do get broken down into 15-minute, as small as 15-minute increments. And they've got a very, very detailed logbook, work diary that they need to fill in. And it's very easy to make a mistake, and it's very easy for the men and women driving trucks to get a penalty for a very small administrative mistake. They are confusing. I make no mistake about it. But there is a difference between, a very strong difference, a very clear difference between how far you can drive in one unbroken period, as opposed to how far you can drive, hypothetically, in a 24-hour period or in a 7-day week.
Is there any requirement in a 24-hour period that a driver get 8 hours sleep somewhere?
Unbroken.
Yeah.
There is no, to the best of my knowledge, there is no specific requirement that they must have an 8-hour sleep.
Isn't that a concern?
No, I don't believe so, because the drivers are professionals. These men and women, they are quite capable of managing their fatigue as long as they are within the guidelines. And I go back to what Tony was referring to before about, and this is where we do agree, we've got to make sure that there are no unreasonable nor unfair commercial pressures. And when we don't have unreasonable nor unfair commercial pressures placed upon drivers, I believe that the driving hours, as they are at the moment, are safe.
Where does this advice come from, though? Because if I had a doctor on here, or a sleep expert, which I have had in the past, not specifically about trucking, they would tell me unquestionably that hours of unbroken sleep, and for the average person, even adults, somewhere between 7 and 9 hours is what people need. Why are truck drivers different?
They've got a very, very demanding job, Phil, and they've got to battle the traffic. They've got to be able to be flexible to meet the requirements of their job, and this is why they are extremely, in the main, well trained. And again, this is why one of our calls always has been and always will be that we need greater attention paid to rest areas so that when they do need to have a rest break, there is a rest area of suitable standard at an appropriate distance on the highway for them to be able to take a rest break whenever they need to.
Mm. A couple of truckers just texted me saying you can drive for 5 hours and 15 minutes or 5 hours and 5.25. In other words, 5 hours and 15 minutes, and then you must have at least a 15-minute break. Thanks, Steve, in the truck. But once you've had the break, you can drive again, can you, for another 5 hours and 15 minutes?
That's correct.
A lot of people would think that's 10 hours driving a heavy articulated vehicle for 30 minutes. You can't sleep in any of those breaks. You can't sleep.
Not 15 minutes.
But you can't sleep in 15 minutes.
You can't, no, but you can. You don't have to just take the minimum rest break. If you're tired and you want to sleep and you've got the capability of doing it, you can have a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
No, I agree. Jeff, what I'm getting to, I suppose, is if someone says to you, look, the truck has to be in Melbourne by a certain hour, that may mean that you can't sleep. It would mean that you can't sleep.
And this is where we need to make sure that the operator of that vehicle has ensured that that driver has got the appropriate fitness to drive prior to commencing on his trip, has got the appropriate equipment to enable him to do the trip, and has got the appropriate backup measures in place so that should the driver be tired, that there is some degree of flexibility, I would hope, that driver would be able to take an extended rest period where possible.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we have clearer rules, Tony Shelton?
Well, I think probably...
There's confusion on the text line as to how many hours you can drive too.
I've got to say back to Jeff's comments and the technical hours that people can have a break and the technical right to have breaks exist. Jeff's accurately described how the law reads. But reality in the trucking industry, that's not how it operates. The reality is when a client wants it there cheap, quick, then it's done cheap and quick, and people meet break deadlines. There's many truck drivers and trucking companies that definitely do the right thing. You know, there's a whole sway of people that, regardless of the economic pressure, turn around and run a good business. And drivers that are under a lot of pressure. But what the critical problem that we've got, and that is that, you know, when you do run from Melbourne, you get loaded for a few hours in Sydney, you then get unloaded for a few hours in Melbourne, and if you don't do it that way, then you simply don't win the contract. You don't maintain it. There is very few contracts that actually allow people to have proper breaks. And trucking companies are under the whip hand of these very powerful clients, and it's driven by economics. The law doesn't operate effectively. We've just done a survey online of 1,000 truck drivers, 70% employees, 30% owner-drivers, and 90% of those drivers said that police operations will not make their work safer. And that's the, you know, what Jeff's point about economic certainly pressure from commercial pressure is what I believe, and I certainly believe that the drivers believe, that the nearly 1,000 drivers that have responded to the survey believe, is the critical thing that affects their daily work. Safe Work Australia says the same thing. You know, they said 20% of transport employers accept dangerous behaviour compared to less than 2% in other industries. 32% of transport employers say workers ignore safety rules to get the job done.
If I'm on an aeroplane, which in some respects is not, in terms of safety, etc., maybe it's a bit of a long boat. It's not that far different from a massive B double. Even the flight attendants aren't allowed to work more than a certain period of time before they're pulled off. Steve from Wodonga says, I'm on a basic fatigue management. I can work 5.5 hours, then I have to have a 15-minute minimum break. After 7.5 hours, I have to have another 15-minute break. Well, you can't sleep in either of those. And after 10 hours, I have to have a minimum 30-minute break. Well, you're not going to sleep in that either. When do drivers actually sleep, Jeff?
As I said before, Phil, that's the minimum amount. There is a, that's a minimum they can do in that.
But presumably the industry is just complying with the minimum, aren't they?
That is. Oh no, I don't think that's the case. And I think I'll go back to what Tony was saying too. And this is where one thing where we do agree, where there is unreasonable pressure, and we're as concerned about that as anyone, from powerful industry customers, if they're out there, that's why the ATA has strongly and very ferociously supported the chain of responsibility amendments. They'll come into force in mid-2018. If they're out there, there are laws that are already existing in place. There are laws that may be made tougher later this year, and they've got extremely strong penalties. Under these amendments, the directors and executives of powerful customers will have to exercise every bit of due diligence to make sure that their companies and the people that work for them and their company don't cause a safety risk on the road. And if they breach that, there's a maximum penalty of $300,000 or 5 years imprisonment, or both in a serious offence.
I'm still trying to work out when anyone sleeps. I mean, my text here doesn't seem to my texters don't seem to indicate you can either, because these 15-minute breaks. I mean, 15-minute breaks by the time you stop the truck and do what? Have a toilet stop? Phil, there is time.
I'll give you a case example. I mean, I run a small trucking company in regional New South Wales in Wagga Wagga. So if hypothetically, say, 5 hours driving time between Wagga and Sydney, the driver leaves at a time of his choosing, drives in theory for 5 hours, has a rest break. He's got a bit of time to do unloading and reloading. He can go and have another rest break if he chooses, and then drive back. He can get all that done in that 12 hours, or with basic fatigue management in another hour or two. And then he's got 10, 12, 14, 16 hours before he has to go and do another trip. These guys aren't doing 12 hours or 14 hours back to back, time after time, with no chance for rest in between. They're doing a trip, going home, having a rest, having a break, and rest sleeping in their own bed, and then coming and completing another trip the next day, 24 hours later. That's how it works in the real world.
How are these things measured these days? I mean, surely the equivalent of a truck cam or a truck computer would would be able to measure these things accurately. So why can people cheat on them?
Well, I think there's a couple of things here. I just probably in answering that question that you posed, that I think I just have to just wheel back a little bit on what Jeff was saying before. Over in the Macquarie University study just last year, 80% of truck drivers work more than 50 hours a week, and you know, that's understandable. But 10% of truck drivers work more than 80 hours a week. Mm. The maximum hour is supposed to be 72. Well, I think 72 is a huge amount of hours, but more than, you know, 10% work more than 80 hours. One in six truck drivers who own their trucks do not believe they can refuse an unsafe load because they haven't got rights of reinstatement. So this new legislation that's coming in for heavy vehicle regulations might have a top-end penalty, but what will happen is truck drivers will get fined the $50,000 because they're under pressure from clients and transport operators to breach when they breach the law. So we're going to find a situation where truckies are going to get it in the neck again, not just from making a mistake in their logbooks, but because of the pressure that it's applied to truckies every day, every night, and too much of the market.
Eden says, good evening, Phil. Trucks are now time slotted for loading and unloading, which I believe to be the case as well. Mm. Transport companies book time slots prior to the trip with minimum break times allowed. Drivers generally have to drive to the limits to make the allocated slots because the loading and unloading is actually not at the driver's whim, is it, Jeff? Unloading and loading is in time allocated slots, isn't it?
Well, that is, there is a certain amount of the industry that does have time slots. And, you know, what I would like to see happen there is that whenever a driver has a time slot, that the operations department in the company giving that load, whether it be his employer or the customer, is making sure that time slot can be achieved within legal driving hours. And the other part that I will call, as far as the time slots are concerned, I believe there's an absolute responsibility on the distribution centre or the port or wherever the end destination is, that if a driver has a 9 a.m. time slot, he's got a reasonable expectation, he or she has a reasonable expectation to be unloaded at or about that 9 a.m. time slot and not 4 or 5 hours later.
Mm. Well, let's take some calls. Warren, hello.
Hey, Phil, how you going?
Not too bad, mate.
Mate, I'm an interstate driver. I drive express freights. That's overnight express freights. That has to be there next day.
Right. But where from to and where?
Brisbane, the city, and vice versa.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, now I'm a little bit gobsmacked that your guests don't know all the logbook rules of myself. Now, I'm on basic fatigue management, which allows me to work 14 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm allowed to drive 6 hours, then I must have a minimum 15-minute break. But what I do is I drive for a period of 5.75 hours, so 5 3/4 hours,
mm-hmm.
and I do not care where I am, I pull up.
Right.
I pick parking bays to pull up in on the side of the road and things like that, but I pull up. And I have a half an hour break, sometimes a 45-minute break. And in that break time, I fit a 15-minute power nap in, which refreshes me.
Right.
And then I drive through another 2.5 hours, and I pull up at Heatherbrae there at Newcastle, and I have another 15-minute break. Now, depending on traffic getting in the city, and I arrive in Sydney around about 9 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I have an extra 15-minute break, but if I can make it in within my period, I will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
Now,
so you have to meet a slot, do you?
No. I just have to get it there next morning.
Right.
Okay. So now I have worked with time slots in the past, so I've been in the industry a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, more than 25 years. Now my whole way of thinking is, what the government needs to do, they need to put a tribunal in for starters, of a panel, three or four panels all over the country, one in each state. Now, if a driver is dismissed because he doesn't make a time slot or he has a break, he needs some sort of recourse back to a tribunal to take on his employer. Because, you know, if you get tired, you have to have a break. Now, I don't care who I'm working for. If I'm tired and I need a break, I do have it.
When do you get to sleep, Warren?
Okay, when I get into Sydney, the company I work for now, that I'm currently working for, and I've been working for the last 3 years,
yeah.
they have a premises in Sydney where they have a dormitory, which is air conditioned, which has got partitioned off beds in there. They've got partitions. They haven't got doors, but they've got partitions, and it's an air conditioned dormitory. And I go there and I spend 10 hours there.
Okay.
Right? I spent 10 hours there. Now, you have to have a minimum of a continuous 7 hours. Now, that continuous 7 hours, that truck's not allowed to move from the where you pull it up. So, you know, there's really no good reason for you to get fatigued if you plan it properly.
Okay.
Now, if there's a lot of companies out there that do push their drivers, they're the ones that need to be weeded out of the industry. Right? Now, another thing that needs to happen with the industry, what they need to do is pull some of the old heads off the road like myself and start up what they call a traineeship for drivers. They need to start training drivers properly, because unfortunately these days it's too bloody easy to get licensed. You can go do a one-day course and move straight onto a B-double, right? Now, that's whether you can reverse the thing or not. Now, I've been on sites where I've actually had to get into a truck and for another driver because they couldn't put it on the dock.
We've had a few calls on that in the past, Warren. Look, thanks, mate. That explains a lot of things quite clearly. Yeah. I appreciate that. Jeff, can we talk about licensing? Because is it too easy to get a truck license?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is too easy. I think Warren's dead on the money with that. I think it needs to be a much more rigorous training program that drivers need to go through to go from a medium rigid to a heavy rigid to a heavy combination to a multi combination license. It is too easy, and I think there is very, very definite work that needs to be done in that area. I've heard anecdotal stories myself, similar to Warren's, about the issues that some drivers with insufficient experience have had in even just reversing a trailer.
We've had a lot of discussion. We've had talk back on this in the past that people say there's a shortage. There's a shortage, particularly of B double drivers, and the shortage is being filled by people, particularly overseas drivers, who can't do much more than particularly can't reverse the thing.
And as I said, that's why we need to have much greater training. And also the driver. It's not just the drivers that need better training. It's also some of the trainers need better training as well.
Tony, is it too easy to get a license?
Too easy to get a license. And certainly in the case of a lot of the overseas drivers, it's really, really tough. And I think I definitely agree with Jeff and Warren's comments about the need for training more thoroughly drivers that are upgrading their skills. But, you know, the thing is that these are all systematic things that need to happen. They're almost so obvious it's embarrassing that we're talking about it 20 years later, because we've been talking about this for 20 years.
Yeah, we have. Graham, hello.
Yes, hi. I've been driving trucks now for 35 years.
Yep.
33, I've owned my own, and I've got my own small fleet that I operate.
Mm-hmm.
I've been filling out a logbook for a long time, and, Warren was right. I'm on BFM, and in any 24-hour period, you can only work 14 hours. So that you've got to have 10 hours off, and 7 of that's got to be a block of 7.
Right, okay.
Now, at the very start of the show, you talked about the death rate in New South Wales rising.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't care what anyone says, it coincides with the rollout of Safety Cam. Now, Safety Cam in New South Wales forces people to drive when they don't want to. And those safety
can you just explain what Safety Cam is?
Well, the RMS has put them at each border and at intervals all on the major highways, and they track us as we go under them.
Now, is this a point-to-point speed?
No, point-to-point separate.
Right.
Safety Cam tracks your truck all over New South Wales. Now, with the logbook system as we got it now, it's inflexible, totally inflexible. So you have to monitor your logbook with Safety Cam all day, all night, to get over the border. Now, it forces you to drive, because every driver out there tonight is driving to get past that last camera at Auburn, the last camera at Chindra near the Queensland border, the last Chindra at Boggabilla, the last camera at Boggabilla. We're all trying to get past that last camera, and that's forcing blokes to drive. And because our logbook rules are so inflexible, you just can't pull up and have an hour. You just can't do that. Once upon a time when we had to have a 6-hour block. I could have the 6 hours in Sydney, and then I could drive up the road and have 1 hour in the afternoon or 2 hours under a shady tree.
Mm-hmm.
But that now, because we have to have a 7-hour block, that hour in the afternoon has moved over now to my 7-hour block. I've used my hour up, so I don't get my hour under the tree of an afternoon to have a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole logbook system is inflexible. The driver needs to be allowed to manage his fatigue. Electronic gadgets don't manage your fatigue. They tell you when you're out of hours. They tell you when you should be stopped, but you don't want to stop.
Graham, if you don't have some sort of system to monitor it, though, don't you get a situation where you'll get drivers who auction themselves down in terms of the amount of driving and the amount of sleep that they're prepared to cop?
No, we get pulled up all the time. You get your logbook checked all the time. You get pulled up all the time. And most blokes are doing the right thing. Everyone's doing the right thing. Like years ago, we'd go to get to the top of the hill at Byron Bay, and if you're feeling pretty tired through the night, a bit ragged, you pull up and have a couple of hours. Now, we keep going into Brisbane in the morning, feeling pretty good, and you trudge your book a bit. Everyone did that. But now you can't do that. You have to keep going past that camera at Chindera, and once you get past Chindera, there's nowhere to stop then from all the way into Brisbane. So you've got to drive from Tweed Edge to Brisbane at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, absolutely dead tired with nowhere to pull up. Rest areas are absolutely atrocious in this country. I don't know what's going on. I've had several meetings with Bob Higgins, who's the head of the Pacific Highway Upgrade, and I brought this up at every meeting I've had, that the rest areas are lacking with this big new highway getting built. It's a fantastic highway, but they're taking out all our rest areas. From Port Macquarie to Ballina, there's hardly anywhere to pull up now because they've taken out all our rest areas to upgrade the highway, and they haven't replaced them.
Mm.
So increasing truck crashes and car crashes on the Pacific Highway is directly because you've got two barricades of concrete run up each side of the highway and nowhere to pull up. So car drivers are fatigued. Truck drivers are finding somewhere to try and pull up. They can't. I can drive around in Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne, any capital city, for an hour or more trying to find somewhere to pull up so I can go to bed. It's just horrendous. People do, and I'm very surprised the two guys you got there can't dictate the logbook rules. The logbook isn't really hard to fill out. Basically, it's. I've had one logbook fine in 35 years, and it was back when Queensland used to have 10 hours off, and I had 9.5 hours up, and I got pinged.
Okay.
So it's not that hard to fill out, but to try and comply with it, that's the hardest bit, trying to comply with safety cams and the logbook hours, and particularly time slots. Like, time slots need to be banned out of the game, totally.
Yeah, okay. Inflexible. Right. Thanks, Graham. Let's put some of those issues back to Jeff Crouch, to that issue about banning time slots. What do you think about that, Jeff?
Okay, I'll speak from my own company perspective. I don't like time slots with my own company, with my own drivers. We try and avoid them, but we accept the fact that we have to have them from time to time. We're very fortunate within my own company that we are able to have some very good customers that give us a little bit of flexibility, and it works in our case. And I'll go back to what Graham said there a moment ago about the inflexibility of the driving hours, and that is absolutely a big issue. It's something that the ATA has taken up on many occasions with the federal government. It's taken up on many occasions with the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator, and about the necessity that the drivers, professional men and women driving trucks, should be able to have a little bit more flexibility within appropriate guidelines and within reasonable parameters to manage their fatigue to their better, that they are much more able to do so.
Well,
and I also, so if I can just say,
yeah,
I just mentioned one of the things I mentioned at the very beginning, and Graham just said exactly the same thing. It's rest areas. We need to have more rest areas. And we need to have rest areas that, especially during school holidays, don't get taken up by motorists and by caravanners that don't have the same prescriptive driving hours that heavy vehicle drivers
do. We don't have very many, do we, Tony Shelton? We don't have very many. I mean, this is just anecdotally my own experience of the highways. We don't seem to have many areas at all which are available for truck drivers. I mean, we've got places you could stop, but I mean, it's a free-for-all.
Oh, absolutely right. You know, the rest areas for truck drivers is, in many circumstances, non-existent. And,
So this is a direct responsibility of state governments, is it?
A direct responsibility of state governments and federal governments with their funding. And so you've got to, this goes to the heart of, the policy breakdown when it comes to dealing with the trucking issue, whether it's fatigue-related issues, whether it's rest stops, whether it's pressure on clients, whether it's the issue of time slots. You know, the most frustrating thing in this conversation that we're all having is that we all, but on many of these issues, all of us agree and have agreed for the last 30 years that it needs to be fixed and been put into governments consistently it needs to be fixed. And yet the last announcement we got from the New South Wales government, they were going to electric shock truck drivers.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, we have all these kind of, shock and awe crackdowns on truck drivers. I mean, in many instances, of course, it's not the truck drivers at fault at all. It's many of these other issues which we're talking about. But that seems to be the general approach to safety, which is to blame it on drivers. G'day, John.
Oh, g'day, Philip. How are you?
Well, thanks, mate.
Very interesting discussion. I was pretty excited at the beginning when I heard particularly Tony Sheldon's comments about addressing certain things, but it soon turned to disappointment as the other callers have mentioned that the two gentlemen there, are very unsure themselves about the, fatigue laws and the logbook rules and so on and so forth. And it's no wonder we've been banging on about this for 30 plus years because we've got people, working for our cause that aren't even aware of the laws.
How long have you been driving, John?
I've been driving for 41 years.
Right. What do you think the main issues are? We've talked about rest areas. We've talked about the need for greater logbook flexibility. We've talked about the issue of whether safety cam is a good thing or not. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would. First of all, I do agree with the point about the it's not a sort of one size fits all thing. We all have different ways in which we operate, and it just doesn't allow for that. So, in fact, you can actually get fined for having too much rest, which is ridiculous. So, but that aside, I think Tony mentioned the figure of 20% of drivers are breaking the law on a daily basis in order to perform their jobs. I believe it's higher than that. I believe it's much higher than that. The time slots is an issue, and I certainly can understand why the farming community would have an issue with the chain of responsibility laws that are coming in. Because, a lot of that, as an example, right, if you bring a load of produce into the Sydney market, you've got a six-hour window. Now, we've got a city of over 5 million people. That's our main produce market there at Flemington. They've got trucks coming in with produce from all over the country, and they've got a six-hour window every night. If you're not there by 4 a.m., you're not getting your load off. So what happens if you turn up at 4:05 with a load of bananas from North Queensland and you can't get rid of that load? So, of course, drivers are going to do what they need to do in order to get that load off. The other issue is, and just I'd like to make the point that in the last 3 years, I've actually blown the whistle on two companies. I've been in touch with the RNS and made it very clear as to what happened. And I was an owner driver for 10 years, and you sort of do your own thing. But I was very surprised when I went for a job interview. And this will highlight what I think one of the major issues is. Who indicated to me that on a Sydney to Brisbane league, that when you got to Brisbane, you were required to run off the book, which means don't fill your work diary in while you're doing your deliveries and reloading. So you're not recording that work time, so that you will have enough hours to get back to Sydney the next night. And that is rampant within the industry.
Yeah, okay. All right, John, we'll move on because others do want to have their say here. Texts, where are we? Yes, those two. This is the one I wanted. Shane, Shane's comment, which has some sense in it too, I think. He says, time slots are a necessary evil. No one likes them. The large W, for example, has thousands of loads in and out of every distribution centre across the nation daily, maybe 100 of us on site 24/7. This has to be rationalised in some way. That's probably true, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, look, there is, and I think Shane's also, as much as I don't like time slots, I think he's 100% correct in that when you're going into some of the major distribution centres, and we'll use Big Dobby or anywhere as an example, it'd be even worse situation than what we have now if you have, 100 trucks all turn up at the same time and a great big long line all waiting for hours and hours to get unloaded. Time slots as a necessary evil when they work and when the distribution centre or the receiver has the necessary resources in place that they should to make sure that the drivers are unloaded when they're booked to be there. And as long as the operator sending the driver there has done all the necessary make checks and balances to make sure the driver can get there in a legal time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are a necessary evil in that respect.
Mm, okay. Back to calls. Tony, hello.
Yeah, g'day. Evening, gentlemen. Very first thing I'd like to say is these two gentlemen are supposed to be highly qualified gentlemen, yet they know stuff all about the logbook, which is very confusing when you read through it. And maybe they should obtain a logbook and actually read through it and get their female lawyers to read through it. Then they might understand it a bit better. That's the first thing.
Yep. What apart from the things we have mentioned, Tony, what do you think needs attention?
Well, basically, as the previous caller said before, that training is an absolute must. We had this Centrelink turning around telling people that have been retrenched, "Oh, go and get a truck license. We'll pay for your truck license and go and drive a truck with money."
Hmm.
2 weeks later, they're out driving B-doubles up and down the highway. Got no idea which... If it didn't have a steering wheel at the front, they wouldn't know which was the front end or which was the back end of a frigging truck. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's an issue. Thanks, Tony. It's an issue which we have talked about a bit too. That is licensing requirements in the industry. Darren, hi.
How are you, Philip? Yep. I'll make four very quick points.
Yep.
I'll go into new topics. The first one's to you, Mr. Sheldon. Why did it take us 3 months to convince your solicitor in Melbourne that loading and unloading time should be classified as paid work? Two, I've got an application before the Fair Work Commission to set aside a workplace agreement that was written 16 years ago that does not even come close to the boot test today, the boot test being the better off overall test. You're supporting the employer. Number three, that we've proven that there's an annexure between death and underpayment. The average driver that works for a small company is underpaid to the tune of $25,000 a year, and the Fair Work Ombudsman is nothing but a toothless tiger. I pursued someone for 2 years for $17,000 and not a step closer.
Okay, Darren, let's put some of those issues to Tony Sheldon. Tony?
Quite frankly, I don't know what the particular cases he's talking about, but... No one should be waiting for 3 months to say that you should be getting paid for loading and unloading where there's an entitlement to it. I'll just answer and then by all means have a go back. One of the issues also is that if you're an owner driver, there was payments to be made, except the Australian Trucking Association got rid of, as part of a campaign to get rid of owner drivers being paid. Owner drivers having whistleblower protections, owner drivers being paid within 30 days, clients being held to account. So that piece of legislation that had been won by many owner drivers campaigning and employees over 20 years was wiped out by the federal government just 2 years ago. So on the waiting time issue, if you're entitled to it, you're entitled to it. There's no convincing, and I am interested off air if you feel comfortable. Give it the details to Philip and I'll personally follow it up with you. And by all means, if you're not happy with the result, I'm sure more than happy for you to discuss it with Phil or me or anyone else at any other appropriate place. Regards to boot tests on the 16-year, I'm really not aware of any agreements that exist with that sort of arrangement. But if there is that problem occurring, I'm very keen to hear about it because it shouldn't be occurring where it's
Tony,
not meeting the minimum standards. Yes, sorry.
We actually had to convince your solicitor, Teresa, that loading and unloading time should be counted as work time and therefore be paid under a modern award. And I've got an application which goes to a first hearing on Friday to set aside a 16-year-old workplace agreement. It was written pre-EBAs, and your union is supporting it not being set aside, even though it doesn't meet the boot test. And the comment made to me by Theresa was, if it probably met the boot test when it was written 16 years ago, it doesn't need to meet the boot test today.
Okay. Right, Darren, I'll tell you what, can we might get your details, and Tony, we'll put those details too, right? I just want to get through some other calls because we're trying to get as many calls as we can here. Suki, can we get make sure we get Darren's number, and make sure we get Darren's number, okay. Good. Philip. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hi.
South of Cowra today, within about 2 or 3 minutes, I would imagine, I encountered a truck rollover.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the gentleman was still in the cabin. I pulled up. There was a lady who had obviously passed just as the truck would have practically turned over, and she was running back up the road. Anyway, I got to the truck and I yelled out to the bloke, "Hey, you're right, a huge truck, probably $500,000 worth. I think it was a load of flour," although it took the gentleman finally, when I got to talk to him, about 5 or 6 minutes to, because of his very poor English, and probably in shock as well, I would imagine, to tell me that it was not explosive, it was flour, right?
No.
When I assisted him to get out, because another gentleman pulled up and said he better get out because there was fuel being dripping about and whatever,
mm-hmm.
he gets out of the vehicle. He'd been standing in the vehicle, apparently talking to his boss, or trying to contact his boss. And when he got out of the truck, as I say, about $500,000 worth, he was in a pair of thongs.
Hmm.
And I just wonder, you know, why somebody would be allowed to drive a truck in a pair of thongs. You know, I thought it was illegal. Anyway, when I rang emergency services, AAA, the gentleman on the phone, I couldn't understand. He was obviously
sure.
A new Australian. Very difficult to understand. Finally, we got, you know, we were transferred to the police as a, you know, part of the emergency services situation. And the operator kept asking, we said, south of Cowra, Oxley Highway. And she said, what city, what suburb? And she repeated that about half a dozen times.
Well, that's a problem too. The bloke's all right, though, is he?
Yes, look. The truck's not, but we do our speed limit. We're in a very late model car. I think the Oxley Highway, as I remember, because we'd come from Queensland over about 3 days, is 100 k's. If you're doing 100 k's, these blokes come from nowhere and in the back of your car. And it's just, and the Oxley Highway, as many of the highways are, is, you know, there wouldn't be a workplace in Australia other than the highway where you would be allowed to pass on with a meter.
We don't know. You don't know what caused the accident, though. I mean, this is.
He said there were cattle on the road, he said there were three beasts.
Yeah.
They must have had wings because we were there within seconds, and there was absolutely no sign of anything.
Mm, okay, all right. We don't know what the cause is. That's probably pointless to speculate. How important speed and speeding anyway, Jeff?
Look, speeding is needs to be discouraged when it's above the legal
obviously,
limit.
But how much of a problem is it?
Look, it's hard to say how much of a problem it is because there's very good, you know, reasonably strong enforcement in the vast majority of cases, whether it be by static cameras or whether it be by highway patrols.
Aren't
but
the,
can we just
yeah,
go back?
On.
Sorry, I was going to say, when we go back to and we start talking about heavy fatalities in motor vehicle accidents for heavy vehicles, and we're talking about, this is what we really need to concentrate on. And one of the things that the ATA has been calling for quite some time, and we're going to continue to call for it, is there is still no really good, strong, demonstrable evidence about what is causing the majority of these accidents. We know that 80% of them in multi-vehicle accidents involving heavy vehicles are the fault of the light vehicle driver.
And not the truck driver's fault.
That's 100% correct.
You're shaking your head here, Tony. Why?
Well, that's statistic is by the Bureau of Infrastructure.
Very briefly, Tony, because we're running out of time.
Very quickly, and that is that the New South Wales Centre for Road Safety, which is a state government body, said that in the case of 60% of fatalities For injuries from crashes from trucks, and 38% from other road users. In the case of fatalities, the statistics change again. There's actually, one of the problems, I think, which I'm just highlighting now, is that there's different expectation, what the figures are.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm sorry, Jeff. We have run out of time. We're up against the news bulletin, and we are going to have to take it. We should do this conversation again because we've covered some ground. There's a lot more to be covered. I do thank you for your time, Jeff Crouch, Chair of the Australian Trucking Association,
and
Tony Sheldon, National Secretary of the Transport Workers Union, have been our guests tonight. Thanks to every truckie and stick jockey who's called in and texted as well. I'm sorry I couldn't get to everybody. I tried to give as many as I could a go.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.